Thank you very much, and welcome to this programme in which we incite four people who have a way with words to have a go at a few lexicographical conundrums, or should it be conundra. And our teams today are Anne Scott-James and Frank Muir versus Victoria Glendinning and Dennis Norton. The American poet James Russell Lowell wrote, "Nature fits all her children with something to do. He who would write and can't write can surely review." I thought I'd get a sympathetic murmur or two for that. Well, here come some less than favourable reviews. Frank, in 1847, in the North British Review, James Lorimer gave the following notice to a novel. "Here all the faults of Jane Eyre are magnified a thousandfold, and the only consolation we have in reflecting upon it is that it will never be generally read." What, for 2 marks, what was the novel?
Has he rubbished another Bunty?
Yes.
Ah.
Now that narrows the field.
No, not really, does it? Because if you're against Jane Eyre, you'd be horrified by Wuthering Heights, wouldn't you?
And you would be Wuthering 2 points as well, so 2 points to Frank. Victoria, here's the good Dr. Johnson's view of a poem. "The diction is harsh, the rhymes uncertain, and the numbers unpleasing. Its form is that of a pastoral, easy, vulgar, and therefore disgusting." Of what poem was he writing?
I've never understood why everybody's so crazy about this man, Dr. Johnson. I think he's...
Frank has had an attack of the vapours.
I'm really sorry, but he is extraordinary, kind of pompous and dismissive. Yeah, I know who he didn't like. I think he was talking about Paradise Lost.
No, he was talking about Milton.
All right, Lycidas.
Lycidas, you get your...
But he's the least disgusting in a way.
Yes, I think
you are so wrong about Sam. He's a very funny man, very nice man, humble. I don't know why you should dislike him.
You know, at the end of his life, people just have him to supper because his table manners were so bad. He just used to put his hand in the steak and kidney.
Well, he was short-sighted. He was short-sighted, so he ate fish with his fingers to get the bones out. That seems to me to be eminently sensible.
Yes, but he did squash innocent people, didn't he? People who really weren't up to being squashed.
Yes.
Yes. Like the woman who showed him her grotto. Do you remember that? And he said, "Don't you think this is a charming grotto?" And he said, "It'd be a lovely retreat for a toad."
Here's Voltaire's opinion of a play, Anne. "It is a vulgar and barbarous drama which would not be tolerated by the vilest populace of France or Italy. One would imagine this piece to be the work of a drunken savage." 2 marks, name the play.
Well, I'm sure it's Shakespeare. Mm. Of course, Voltaire was a professional iconoclast, wasn't he? And he was just being rather wicked and rather superficial. I've got to guess the play. I think it might be vulgar, barbarous.
Oh, I'd go...
How anybody can say anything's barbarous who's written Candide, I can't understand.
Hamlet.
I will try Hamlet, but it's against my better judgment.
Well, against your better judgment, you get 2 points, because it was about Hamlet. Well done. Dennis, here's a rejection letter received by an author. "My dear fellow, I may perhaps be dead from the neck up, but rack my brains as I may, I can't see why a chap should need 30 pages to describe how he turns over in bed before going to sleep. Name the work being rejected."
It's just sort of strangely uneasy kind of slang it's written in.
I think it's a bad translation. Or it is a translation.
So it's a foreign work.
A foreign chap.
Are we thinking of a foreign novelist as
well?
Oh. My dear chap, would it be Proust?
It would be Proust, and therefore...
Or remembrance of things past, I would think.
Of course. 2 points to Dennis.
It's vaguely like the, that sounded like the magnet, that, my dear chap, the, you know, the awfulness is terrific sort of thing, isn't it?
It sounded to me like a translator who wants to sort of give the flavour of being a letter and has gone quite in the wrong direction. Now, before we go on to round two, here, Frank and Dennis are the quotations you were given for the last round. Dennis's is, love is a many splendid thing, which he describes as a high-calorie theme song of the 1955 film of the same name. Frank's is, no man is an island, an overdone quotation. Now we go on to round two, which is about connections. 2 marks for diagnosing the connection. Frank, who or what is the connection between the inventor of the nickname Namby Pamby and Gracie Fields?
Well, now, the name Namby Pamby was applied to a not all that bad a pastoral poet called Ambrose Phillips at the end of the 17th century, beginning of the 18th century. And it was applied to him, it was applied to him because, trying to curry favour with royalty, he wrote some children's verses which were very Namby Pamby. And the word Namby Pamby was invented, the epithet was invented by a good Yorkshire chap called Henry Carey, who was famous, or was still in the books nowadays, because he wrote an extremely popular ballad called Sally in Our Alley.
You're very close.
And Sally, the word Sally was a song sung by Gracie Fields, who desperately wanted to marry Sally. Mm.
That's 2 full marks to Frank. Victoria, what's the connection between Aldous Huxley, John Whiting and Arthur Miller?
That's a very sort of smart question. I knew I shouldn't have come. Aldous Huxley.
Nothing smart about it.
I think so. Really posh question. John Whiting. And the third one?
Jonathan Miller.
Arthur Miller.
Jonathan Miller. Arthur Miller. I know John Whiting and Arthur Miller both. Is it Arthur Miller wrote about witches? Women as witches, the witches of Salem. Is that right?
Yeah.
And John Whiting. Crucible.
Yeah.
That's right. And did Aldous Huxley write about women
the
too?
The,
or did he say we were devils?
Devils of Loudon.
The devils of Loudon. Yeah. They all wrote books about women who are thought to be perfectly horrible.
Possessed by the devil. 2 full marks. They all wrote works based on an incident in which a group of women is allegedly possessed by the devil. The devils of Loudon, the devils, and the crucible was the Arthur Miller one. And what's the connection between sexual politics and frogs?
Well, there is a very obvious connection, which is the Greek playwright Aristophanes.
Well, that'll do for 2 marks.
There is a slight confusion here, because the book about sexual politics was not, of course, the frogs.
No.
It was the Lysistrata.
That's it. But the connection is Aristophanes.
I can't too closely remember what the frogs was about, but it was something to do with choosing the best...
Quack.
Yeah. I always thought it was about frogs. Frogs don't quack. It was about poetry and tragedy, I think.
Our biology book had that in it. They go hickety-hick skirts. We all went round the fields trying to find frogs by giving their mating call. It's written by... We didn't find one. But it was that noise. It's written in the verse. Dennis, what is the connection between Alexander Dumas Sr. and Franz Liszt? And come to that, Ludwig of Bavaria.
What puzzles me is, and come to that. There's a film by Max Ophuls, or Ophuls, or however you pronounce it, a lovely film where Peter Ustinov plays a ringmaster.
Yes.
And it's the story of Lola Montez, and she's in love with Ludwig of Bavaria, who was played by Anton Walbrook. All the older ladies now rub their elastic boots together. And I think these gentlemen all played a part in The Lola Montez support scheme.
Yes, so Lola Montez is indeed the connection. Yeah. 2 marks to Dennis. Now we come to a round which I call highly adjacent. It's suggested by one of our listeners, Mr. Wood of Manchester. I better give you an explanation slowly of it, because I'm going to give you a one-word definition of three words that lie next to one another in the dictionary. And what I want to know for 1 mark each are the three words. So I'll give you a definition for each word. As a for instance, I could give you the definitions noisy, lake, and recline. And the words I would be after would be noisy, loud, lake, lock, and recline, wait for it, lounge. So there's three words. What connects them is that they're next to one another.
I think this is too difficult.
I thought lock was spelled L-O-C-H. Is
this money.
Well, I hope Mr. Wood is listening.
This was coming, so I memorised the dictionary before this.
I think the technique is to go for one of them. I've had a few trial runs by. Right. So if you get one, then it's easy to hit them. I've put in an easy one for in each group. Frank, your definitions are game, thorax, and sofa.
Thorax.
Go for thorax.
Thorax is the chest.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, no problem here. Sofa. Chest a field.
That's it.
The first padded. Mm. No. Game. Cheese fancy.
That's it. That's it. You nearly got chess, but cheese fancying is a better one.
It's a good game.
Three marks. Well, you think it's a good game because you've just done it. Now, Victoria, your words are, the definitions are antiquated, obstruction, and midwifery.
Really?
Now, have a go at the midwifery, and that will get you towards the others, I think.
Midwifery. Lord. Well, it's like ob again, like perhaps obstruction is it already. Because obstetrics?
Obstetrics.
But then we've already got obstruction.
Yeah, so what's...
Did you give it me by mistake?
No, I didn't give it to you by mistake. Because it's the next word to obstetrics in the dictionary going backwards.
Going backwards.
What does obstruct? What is
it? An obstacle.
Yes, that's it. And what is antiquated?
Well...
Old.
Obsolete.
Obsolete. We'll do 3 marks.
Excuse me, sir, but I think antiquated is obsolete. I mean, it's old, but it could still be in use and flourishing.
It's a cheap dictionary.
Cheap dictionary. I've already lost it.
And also the words obsolescent.
I've already lost half a pound. Avoirdupois. We only got through 2 rounds. Anne, your three definitions are string, pain, and sparkle. It's sparkle, sparkle, little
corn.
Star, that sort of
corn.
Twinkle.
That's it.
Now we go backwards from twinkle.
Winkle,
pain.
It'll be there somewhere.
Twinge. Will that
boring.
Do?
And
now
string
twine.
Right, 3 marks. I think they're beginning to get the hang of it. Well done, Mr. Wood. Now, Dennis. Belly, beggar, and interval.
There are no easy ones. Yes.
No, you're
what should I go for?
I would go for... you could go
belly.
For belly, which is... You haven't got this word. You haven't got one of these, but people like me who've got a belly have got a bit of a... thing that hangs over our trousers a bit. That somebody's trying to tell you in the front row.
Paunch, a lady
paunch,
there.
Paunch. She can see
fair
round the side of the table.
Right, so beggar would be P-A-U something, and, or P-A-V, or Pavan, you know, and what was the other one? Interval?
Interval, yes. It's
pause. Pause, yes. Pause. So the beggar comes
it's
between
poor,
paunch
poor,
and porch.
Poor beggar, you know, it's
pauper.
A
pauper.
Pauper, 3 months. Now, let's follow that with a quick round of opening lines of what I hope are verses so familiar that you may have to do a double take to pin them down. Quickly, 1 point for the author, 1 for the name of the poem. Frank, much have I travelled in the realms of gold.
I'm first looking at the Chapman's Homer Keats.
Well, 2 marks for Frank. Victoria, we are the music makers and we are the dreamers of dreams.
Just be Irish. They're the only people who have dreams. But it isn't Yeats and it's another somebody else. And I don't know who the other person is.
It's one of that pre-Raphaelite mob.
Apostrophe.
O'Shaughnessy.
O'Shaughnessy,
well,
one
mark.
Yeah. And...
His initials spelt the word awe. I always A-W-E. He was, yeah.
That's right. Arthur William Edgar. O'Shaughnessy. Mm. And he wrote, well, you don't need, if you haven't got that length of name, you can give you the 2 marks, because you only call it Ode. 2 marks. And ethereal minstrel, pilgrim of the sky.
That's terrible.
Over to you.
One of those birds.
A skylark.
Yes.
Shelley. No.
The other one. Keats.
No. Lake District.
Rogers.
Wordsworth. 2 marks, too. Dennis, your quickie. Glory be to God for dappled things.
That's called... I can't remember. Yes, it's by Gerard Manley Hopkins. That's and right. Then it's counter original spare strange. It's got all funny punctuation in it, isn't it? With semicolons and things.
And it's true.
But I can't remember. It's a synonym of dappled, and I can't remember it. Something beauty,
like a
dappled beauty.
No, not from Hamlin, but
Pied Beauty.
Pied Beauty.
Well done.
Which brings us to Frank and Dennis's quotations. And Frank's is, no man is an island.
This is a tale of history, really. It's a love story. And it also explains how the Wexford Musical Festival in Ireland came about. It concerns London in the early 17th century, when the Pilgrim Fathers asked if they could, they put in to James I for a charter to leave these shores and find a quicker way of getting rich on the shores of America. They just escaped. It was the first charter flight, actually, in history. And we are concerned with two men and a girl. I love this love story. The first is John Donne. And John Donne was a kind of poet, metaphysical poet. He's also a semi-clergyman. And John Donne used to take services, but not important services, just the evening quickies. The morning services were grand and lots of choral singing and everything. And it was just a sermon and a Gregorian chant. It was sermon chant at evening. And the John Donne was in love with this girl, Anne Moore. She's also loved by another chap called Norman Conquest. Now, Norman Conquest was a rather flash character, unlike John Donne. And Norman Conquest wore slashed doublets and purple hose, and he had a little bit of beard, like a ferret's armpit in a high wind, and terminal acne. And now both of these were, in fact, during the day, were broadcasters, in a sense, we would call them now, because the old wooden O on the South Bank had spawned these chaps who wanted to take broadcasting outside the theatre, to broadcast, in fact. They went round with big megaphones, and Norman Conquest used to sing all the popular songs, and he was called Woody O One. And John Donne used to do interviews on the street corner with people, and it was called, he was called John Donne of Woody O'Four. And Anmore decided to marry Norman Conquest, and John Moore was shattered by this. So he laid plans, and he knew that Norman Conquest was frightfully ambitious and wanted to be a big thing in showbiz. And there was this Yorkshire schoolmaster, failed, called Wexford Squeers, who wanted to go to Ireland and form this arts music festival. And John Donne said, I'll give you a sum of money to set it up if you'll take this Norman Conquest as the festival supervisor, because he'll jump at the chance and he'll get him out of the way and I'll be able to marry my sweetheart Anne Moore. But Anne Moore thought she was going to get married to Norman Conquest, you see, and she asked John Donne to conduct the marriage service. So there they are. There's Anne Moore waiting. There's John Donne with the prayer book. No bridegroom. And the bell starts ringing, 3:15. I said, where is he? No bridegroom. For whom does the bell toll? John Donne says, ask not for whom the bell tolls. Swiftly passing the prayer book to the real vicar and taking his place beside Anne, he said, it tolls for us. Norman is in Ireland.
A very satisfactory groan, I thought. Dennis, love is a many splendid thing.
Well, it's a variation of the love is a many splendid thing that greets visitors to our home if they happen to enter what John Pudney called the smallest room. You know, I told you that we'd moved recently, didn't I? What I didn't mention, because I hadn't yet realised it, is that the new neighbourhood is populated by people who go in for things like organic quiche and Faye Weldon t-shirts and electric avocado peelers and indoor plants growing out of chinaware at Wellington Boots, to say nothing of stir-frying escargots in a wok, and going to PTA meetings where the kids turn up with three or more parents. In other words, we have fallen among yuppies. And I don't mind telling you, it's been quite a job trying to adapt to their ways, not simply because I just happen to be allergic to monkfish. No, it's more than that. It's just not easy trying to live in what's known as the fast lane when the only fast lane you've previously lived in has been the one marked six items or less. the thing about these type of people is that all their value systems are defined in terms of consumer goods, items like jacuzzis and cordless phones and personalised number plates and wooden loo seats and state-of-the-art kitchen equipment, all of which either cost the absolute earth or when it did happen to be something within our price range, like the cordless telephone, our dog kept taking it out in the garden and burying it. Now, but as for those other yuppie appurtenances, well, have you any idea what traders are now asking for a number plate that begins DN? It's nearly as much as I paid for the whole car. So in the end, I achieved the effect for a fraction of the cost by simply hanging on to my present number plate but changing my name to Joseph Otto Quinlan. It's the same with installing a jacuzzi. What worked out much more economical was just leaving the plumbing as it was, but if ever a neighbour pops around, we just keep dropping entire packets of Alka-Seltzer in the bathwater. Mind you, not all those yuppie accessories can be acquired on the cheap. Our pasta maker, for example, it really was a mistake to buy that from a reject shop. Its electrical circuits turned out to be so dodgy, we didn't even realise that the off switch didn't work till we went out one afternoon and came back to find the whole house under 20 foot of spaghetti. But the most damaging exercise in false economy was in the matter of the wooden loo seat. Now, I don't know how recently you've checked out what the shops are asking for those. Honestly, for the same price, you could have 2 weeks in Spain. So I decided to make one of my own. Now, admittedly, that meant involving myself in carpentry, a craft at which my personal skills can be judged by the little questions I have to keep asking, such as, how do you get blood off a saw? But remember, the objective was to save money, and that I certainly did, because all that wooden loo seat finally cost me was just £35, 28 hours' work, and the tip of one index finger. Now, I grant you, it is not perfect. Due to the fact that I don't possess any kind of lathe or turning tool, the central aperture is square. That is to say, it has four corners rather than being in the customary oval shape. And because I was similarly short of a spoke shave or plane, in fact, any of the tools used to make wood smooth, the seat presents a somewhat rough and jagged surface to oncoming flesh. So, all in all, that seat does not make an ideal object for people to park on for any length of time. In fact, the splinter count is so high, anybody emerging from there can always be recognised by their rather Groucho Marx-type walk. And that is why we have now had to hang up in there a small hand-printed warning, which, as I've mentioned, paraphrases a well-known song, film, and book title. Lav is a many-splintered thing.
While Dennis was causing us a certain amount of pain, we've crunched the numbers on our abacus, and I can announce that the result today is a tie. So off you can all go on your lap of honour until we all meet again. Goodbye. Goodbye.